It was one of those moments we all remember.
ABC News has confirmed that John Lennon, a member of the famed Beatles, maybe the best-known member, was shot twice in the back outside of his apartment building in the west side of New York tonight, rushed to the Roosevelt Hospital, dead on arrival.
Where were you when you heard the news?
I read the news today, oh boy.
It was really quiet that night, and some snow had just fallen, and I had my windows open in my apartment, and I heard these gunshots, like bang, 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 bang.
I was numb. I'm still numb.
We had just played a big gig in Miami, and we walked out, and the news was being announced. We all went into kind of shock.
I was only 4 years old. It was on my birthday, December 8th, 1980. I was 4 years old, and my mom said that I cried all day. I didn't know who John Lennon was, but she said that she couldn't make me have a good day on my birthday.
The report of that gun, I don't know what kind of gun it was. I don't care. It was loud, and it was ferocious. The echo. I never heard anything like that.
I was in my friend's room, and she was a Beatle maniac, and she got a phone call. She went down the hall, came back in tears, and she said, John Lennon is dead.
This is Lennon, The Loss, The Legacy, an ABC News radio special. Here's your host, ABC's Larry Jacobs.
John Lennon was shot and killed outside his New York City apartment building, the Dakota, on December 8, 1980, by deranged fan Mark David Chapman. It was a horrifically violent ending for a peace-loving man, a man considered to be one of the most important artists of our time. Over the next hour, we'll explore Lennon's career.
One of the most magical nights of my life as a musician was when John Lennon came on stage at Madison Square Garden.
His legacy.
He made us think about ourselves. He made us think about the world.
His death.
Do you remember how many shots?
I remember hearing two.
And what could have been.
What do you think if I started to write with Paul again? And I said, it would be great.
A one, two, three, four. The Beatles captivated us from the moment the four mop tops from Liverpool arrived on our shores in 1964.
Ladies and gentlemen, the Beatles!
They charmed us with their good looks, their wit, their hair.
I got a question. Do you want to get a haircut at all?
No.
No, thanks.
I had one yesterday.
That's no lie.
And oh yes, their music.
I want to hold your hand. I want to hold your hand.
Aerosmith guitarist Joe Perry.
I don't think there's a storm that nature created that quite equaled what the Beatles did, and John was a big part of that.
Lennon and Paul McCartney wrote many of the best loved and enduring songs in pop music history.
Help, I need somebody. Help, not just anybody. Help, you know I need someone. Help.
Ringo Starr.
His music, his songwriting, is still one of the finest songwriters last century, we have to say now.
U2 frontman Bono said on the ABC TV special The Beatles Revolution that the Beatles gave other bands false hopes.
The Beatles ruined it for everybody because they put this notion in your head that as well as performing and singing your songs, you could write them, you could produce them, and actually a lot of people can't.
35 years after their breakup, the Beatles' impact on music remains immeasurable. Lennon was inducted posthumously into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame as a member of the Beatles in 1988.
We all know why John can't be here, and I'm sure he would be, and it's hard really to stand here supposedly representing the Beatles. It's what's left, I'm afraid.
While the music he made as a solo artist didn't match the phenomenal success of the music he made with the Beatles, it did earn him a second induction into the Hall of Fame in 1994. Lennon's solo work included memorable songs like Whatever Gets You Through the Night, his first solo number one hit, which he wrote with Elton John.
Whatever gets you through the night, it's all right, it's all right.
And Imagine, which has become an anthem.
Try.
watching all the people living life in peace.
Imagine is such a great song. It's a timeless song that'll live forever.
Singer-songwriter Neil Young performed Imagine at the Tribute to Heroes telethon that aired shortly after the attacks of September 11th.
I mean, I was able to do that song for him at the 9/11 show that was on TV, and I felt honored and really privileged to be able to perform that song and to be his voice at that time.
One, two, three, four. Lennon's fame extended far beyond music, however. He and his wife, Yoko Ono, were ardent peace advocates in the era of the Vietnam War, and their activism often took very public forms, as when they staged bed-ins for world peace in 1969. Journalist Larry Kane became close friends with Lennon. He was the only American journalist to travel with the Beatles to every stop on their 1964 and 1965 North American tours, and recently published a book called Lennon Revealed. Kane says the former Beatle always spoke his mind, even if what he said wasn't always pretty.
I'm sick and tired of hearing things from...
This was a man who said in public what he thought in private. That could be very dangerous. This was a man who had no BS around his life. There was no superficiality. Everything to him was truth, regardless of how nasty the truth might be.
Although that bluntness could sometimes cause an uproar, like the time Lennon said in 1966 that the Beatles were more popular than Jesus. Here's a 1966 news conference provided by Capitol Records where Lennon explained his words.
We meant more to kids than Jesus did, or religion at that time. I wasn't knocking it or putting it down. I was just saying it for the fact. And it is... truth, that's more for England than here. No, but I'm not saying that we're better or greater or comparing us with Jesus Christ as a person or God as a thing or whatever it is. You know, I just said what I said and it was wrong or was taken wrong and now it's all this.
Neil Young remembers Lennon's unvarnished opinion of one of his songs.
When I wrote Out of the Blue and Into the Black, he violently disagreed with the lyrics.
And once you're gone, you can't come.
Stated several times that he didn't agree with what I was saying, which was really good and really honest of him to say that. So I always remember that about him, that he's so truthful and so outgoing and constructive.
Lennon's social and political conscience and his outspokenness made many consider him a voice for his generation. Broadway star Terrence Mann, who portrayed Lennon in a recent short-lived musical about the former Beatle, says that when Lennon died, an important voice was stilled.
When John Lennon was shot, I knew that I, as a young person in the world, had lost the leader of my generation.
Lennon moved to New York City in 1971, settling at the Dakota 2 years later. He spent years battling the U.S. Immigration Service's efforts to deport him because of a 1968 drug arrest in the U.K. He was granted permanent resident status in 1976, and after the ruling, he told reporters why it was important for him to live in the Big Apple.
I've said this many, many times. I have a love for the country, but simply, if it had been 2,000 years ago, we'd have all wanted to live in Rome. This is Rome, and I don't want to live in the hills. This is where the action is, as they say in France.
He became just another resident of New York, albeit a very famous one. Producer Jack Douglas says Lennon, whose favorite haunts included a local cafe called La Fortuna, loved being able to walk around freely.
He had become very comfortable and was no longer in this nightmare Beatle prison of not being able to walk the streets.
I can go hang out this door now and go in a restaurant. Do you want to know how great that is? Mm-hmm. Or go to the movies? I mean, people will come up and ask for autograph or say hi, but they won't bug you, you know?
In fact, when we walked from the Dakota on a daily basis to La Fortuna, there were, you know, numerous shop owners who knew him because he was now picking up his own dry cleaning sometimes. He would go to the pharmacy. And I believe that some of those stores still have pictures of him in the window.
I began to lose control. I began to lose control.
Lennon and Ono separated in 1973. Lennon began a relationship with May Pang, one of his and Ono's assistants. They lived in Los Angeles and New York in the mid-70s during the 18-month stretch known as his Lost Weekend, a period of alcohol-fueled debauchery Lennon embarked on with celebrity friends like Harry Nilsson, Ringo Starr, and Who drummer Keith Moon. Lennon and Ono reunited at a concert Lennon's close friend Elton John gave on November 28, 1974.
I'd like to thank Elton and the boys for having me on tonight. We try to think of...
Lennon appeared with John at the show, which marked his last live performance.
And we thought we'd do a number of an old estranged fiancé of mine called Paul. This is one I never sang. It's an old Beatle number, and we just about know it.
He was honoring a bet he'd made with John, and on his DVD Dream Ticket, John tells the story of Lennon's Madison Square Garden appearance.
One of the most magical nights of my life as a musician was when John Lennon came on stage at Madison Square Garden and sang three songs with the band. He sang I Saw Her Standing There, Whatever Gets You Through the Night, and Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds. Bet that I'd had with John. I said, if whatever gets you through the night gets to number one, which it did, you've got to come on stage with me. And he kept his part of the bargain, although he was physically sick before he came on stage.
Lennon returned to the Dakota in February 1975. Ono gave birth to their son, Sean, on his 35th birthday, October 9th, 1975, and Lennon spent the next 5 years as a stay-at-home father. In November 1980, only a few weeks before his death, Lennon and Ono released the album Double Fantasy.
It's been too long since we took the time. No one's to blame. I know time flies so quickly.
Producer Jack Douglas says it reflects his contented state.
We had a code name for the Double Fantasy album. We called it the Well album. And there's actually some phenomenal number of times that the word well was said by John on the album. And it's a code for how he was feeling.
It was to be the last album he released in his lifetime.
Coming up on Lennon, The Loss, The Legacy, an ABC News radio special, we'll recall Lennon's last day after this. You're listening to Lennon, The Loss, The Legacy, an ABC News radio special. Here's ABC's Larry Jacobs.
The morning of December 8, 1980, John Lennon and Yoko Ono had breakfast at Cafe La Fortuna. Producer Jack Douglas says that while they were recording the album Double Fantasy, it was Lennon's usual practice to eat breakfast there.
We used to have breakfast there almost every morning during the whole process of making Double Fantasy.
Returning to the Dakota, he and Ono gave a radio interview. That afternoon, photographer Annie Leibovitz came to the building for what would be Lennon's last photo session. That session yielded the now iconic image of a naked Lennon curled around a fully clothed Ono that would become the cover of Rolling Stone magazine's issue commemorating Lennon the next month. The American Society of Magazine Editors recently named that image the top magazine cover of the last 40 years. Rolling Stone magazine editor Anthony DeCurtis.
It's something, somebody genuinely showing a side of themselves, you know, Lennon showing a side of himself, and John and Yoko showing a kind of very elemental aspect of their relationship. It's really powerful and very rare that you can get people to do that.
Lennon left the Dakota around 4 o'clock in the afternoon, bound for the Record Plant recording studio. Some fans were waiting outside the building. One was Mark David Chapman, who asked Lennon to autograph his copy of Double Fantasy, and Lennon obliged. In the studio, Douglas and Lennon worked on Ono's single, Walking on Thin Ice. Unbeknownst to Douglas, it would be the last time he would ever see John Lennon.
We had planned the next morning to meet at Sterling, which is a mastering facility. That was when I last saw him. He said to me, I'll see you at 9 a.m. at Sterling. And that was as he got into the elevator.
A short time later, Douglas's girlfriend interrupted his next recording session.
My girlfriend, Christine, came in. She looked very pale, and she asked me to come outside the control room, and she said to me, it was just on the news that John's been shot. He's at Roosevelt Hospital. So I left immediately, and we got a cab and went up to Roosevelt.
WABC TV producer Alan Weiss.
Yoko Ono came in on the arms of a police officer. She stood outside. Inside, they had stripped John Lennon. They began, there was blood all over his chest. I can't tell exactly what they were doing, but there were a number of doctors and nurses working on him.
ABC News has confirmed that John Lennon, a member of the famed Beatles, maybe the best-known member, was shot twice in the back outside of his apartment building in the west side of New York tonight, rushed to the Roosevelt Hospital, dead on arrival.
Fans began to gather at the Dakota.
Outside this rather grim-looking building, the home of many celebrities here in Manhattan, the Dakota, are gathered about 150 people. They just stand around here looking shocked and terribly upset and wanting, as one of them told me, to be at one with the widow of John Lennon, Yoko Ono. This is Martin Bush, ABC News, outside the Dakota in Manhattan.
Love is real.
Ed Koch, mayor of New York when Lennon was shot, remembers a city set by the news that a beloved Beatle was gone.
It was an enormous shock. People gathered night after night at the Dakota building where he and his wife lived. There was an overall sense of sorrow in the city.
It was only a matter of hours before the press sought a comment from the man most closely associated with Lennon, Paul McCartney, who spent the day working in a recording studio, stunned at the news.
What time did you hear the news?
This morning sometime.
Very early?
Yeah. Don't know, yeah?
Drag, isn't it?
5 years later, in a London interview, Paul McCartney explained his initial reaction to Lennon's death.
Now, all the other pundits came out with great comments. Well, John will be sorely missed, and he sounds, and they summed it up. All I could muster was like, it's a drag. And it was like, I couldn't say anything else but that. I just couldn't, nor could George, nor could Ringo. Nobody came out with any big comments, because he was too dear to us. You know, it's just too much of a shock. Yeah.
George Harrison's widow, Olivia, told us how Lennon's death affected Harrison.
Like it affected everybody, you know. I mean, it was tragic. But he always felt that, you know, John was still around, just like I feel George is still around. And, you know, George's spiritual beliefs and realizations were very powerful and very strong. So I think he dealt with it in a way probably not as much loss, the physical loss, but I think he had still had a really strong relationship with John, you know, whether he was here or not, within you, without you.
Life goes on within you and without you.
Elton John and his collaborator Bernie Taupin wrote a tribute to Lennon called Empty Garden.
And I've been walking.
On his DVD, Dream Ticket, Elton remembers the creation of the song.
When he was murdered, I was in Australia. And it was one of those things you can't really believe that happened. And when we did the Jump Up album, Bernie and I decided we wanted to do a song for John.
On December 14th, a worldwide vigil was held in Lennon's memory. A reported 100,000 fans gathered in New York Central Park to observe 10 minutes of silence. Author and media consultant Anthony Rudell, an eyewitness to Lennon's shooting, says the vigil drew mourners from all walks of life.
It was all kinds of people. It wasn't one kind of person on the street. It was kids, parents, minorities. It just brought this mass of people together. I've never been much for religious displays, but it was as close to a religious gathering, but linked not by religion, but by a man's music.
In 1985, Strawberry Fields, a memorial to Lennon in New York Central Park, was dedicated.
Let me take you down, cause I'm going to Strawberry Fields.
To the people of the world, you are my family. This is your garden. It is a gift from John to you, to the city, to the country, and to the world.
Strawberry Fields forever.
Strawberry Fields continues to be a popular gathering place for Beatles fans to this day.
Next, on Lennon, The Loss, The Legacy, an ABC News radio special. What would Lennon be doing if he lived? Some speculation after this. This is Lennon, The Loss, The Legacy, an ABC News radio special. Here's ABC's Larry Jacobs.
This past October 9th would have been John Lennon's 65th birthday. What would he have been doing if he had lived? Would he still be making music? Would he continue to speak out on issues like U2 frontman Bono, who has waged a very public campaign to end poverty in Africa? Would the Beatles have ever reunited?
We can work it out. We can work it out. Life is very short.
Yoko Ono declined to speak to us for this special. Her spokesman told us in an email that she does not wish to do any interviews with anyone during this very sensitive time. But in an interview with us last year, Ono speculated that Lennon would have been involved with computers and the internet in some way.
Well, he would have been the same. You know, the kind of people stuck to ideas and just kept working. So I'm sure that he would have done the same thing, except that maybe he would have jumped on the computer scene, the whole internet and the website scene. He would have loved that. And he would have been, you know, a very prolific songwriter, singer, as he was always.
Ono also felt that Lennon would have branched out musically.
He was not always just sticking to rock and roll. I mean, he had a very avant-garde side too, and he, I think, was involved in mixing different music media in a way already. Yeah, so he would have done that. Yeah.
Lennon's first wife, Cynthia, says of course he'd still be active artistically.
Oh, yes. Either writing, painting, or music. He's got to. I mean, he had to. I mean, that was his destiny. That was the best thing he did.
TV journalist and Lennon friend Larry Kane also thinks that Lennon would have been involved in many different creative pursuits. He feels Lennon would have explored ways to apply advances in technology to his music.
I think that if he had lived, he would have reinvented himself 20 different times. He would have seen an author, a producer, probably a television producer. The satellite age would have allowed him to perform in many different ways.
And Kane is certain that Lennon would have been at ground zero helping people on September 11th.
When I think of John Lennon now, I think of 9/11, because I think that John Lennon would have responded immediately to 9/11. He would have served soup in the kitchen. He would have been down there with the firefighters. He would have been in the middle of it. I know him, and I know how horrible that would have been to him. And I know how much against violence he was.
Producer Jack Douglas has no doubt that Lennon would still be creating topical music.
He would still be writing and performing, and he'd be reflecting on his time. I'm sure he would have quite a bit to say about the situation that this country is in right now.
Douglas says Lennon planned to continue recording music for what ultimately became the 1984 album Milk and Honey. Plan to return to live performing.
There were two things on the drawing board for plans. One of them was a live show to support Double Fantasy. And then the plans were to go back in and finish what became Milk and Honey.
Bob Spitz, author of a new book called The Beatles, The Biography, feels that while Lennon certainly took an interest in politics, he wouldn't have been politically active. Lennon's politics, Spitz says, were much more personal.
John was always political in a way that pleased him.
So this is Christmas.
He got the forum, the arena, to speak out. And he did. He spoke his mind, and he loved being controversial. But I don't think politics was for John Lennon, and I think he had said that a few times while he was alive.
Would Lennon and McCartney have ever written together again?
Rosetta. Sweet Loretta Fat, she thought she was a cleaner, but she was a frying pan.
Certainly the prospect of one of the most celebrated songwriting teams, arguably the most celebrated songwriting team in pop music history, writing together again, is a delightful one for millions of Beatles fans around the world. And there are hints that it might have happened. In a recent AP story, McCartney says he thought they would have written together again if they had been able to patch up their relationship, which had been quite antagonistic after the Beatles split. McCartney says toward the end of Lennon's life, their relationship was improving. May Pang, Lennon's girlfriend during his mid-70s separation from Ono, told us that one day shortly before she and Lennon broke up, Lennon actually broached the possibility of writing with McCartney.
I remember just walking out, about to walk out the room, and says, "I got to ask you something." I said, "What?" You know, and he says, "What do you think if I started to write with Paul again?" And I said, "It would be great."
On the other hand, author Bob Spitz doesn't think Lennon and McCartney would have ever written together again.
I think that that was a marriage that had run its course. Productive? Absolutely. But they had grown up together as kids, as teenagers. They'd spent their entire 20s together. And I think they wanted to go in different directions. Paul perhaps might have written with John again, but John was never going to do that. His ego wouldn't have allowed it.
In an era that saw the famously estranged members of the rock band Pink Floyd reunite at this summer's Live Aid concert, it seems at least plausible that had all the members of the Beatles lived, they might also have been able to put their differences aside and gotten back together. Author Larry Kane told us he thinks a Beatles reunion was a possibility, as long as Lennon wanted it.
The Beatles probably would have gotten together because he would have been the impetus to make that happen.
Which is a belief May Pang shares.
I know that if John wanted it, it would have happened.
Author Bob Spitz, however, thinks that the Beatles would never have reunited.
Might they have all appeared on one stage at one time for something? Yes, but they never would have exploited it. And they certainly never would have gotten back together for the Beatles reunion because it would have just smelled too bad to them.
Lennon himself might beg to differ with that theory, as he demonstrates in this 1973 interview provided by Capitol Records.
If the idea hit me tomorrow, you know, I might call him and say, come on, let's do something. And so I couldn't really tell you. If it happens, it'll happen. My memories are now all fond and the wounds are healed. And if we do it, we do it. If we record, we record. I don't know it. As long as we make music.
Lennon would have had a chance to play with his old mates. That was Paul McCartney, George Harrison, and Ringo Starr in 1994 at Harrison's house playing Thinking of Linking, a song Lennon and McCartney wrote as teenagers. You can find that on the Beatles Anthology DVD.
Ahead on Lennon, The Loss, The Legacy, an ABC News radio special. ABC's Aaron Katursky and a witness to Lennon's shooting look back on that dark night after this. This is Lennon, The Loss, The Legacy, an ABC News radio special.
I want to be with my best friend, my wife. Who could ask for anything more? I'd sooner do something else together than not work together. And that's why I think that comes across in the work now. And we feel like this is just the start.
John Lennon, sounding upbeat and excited about the future in an interview he gave December 7th, 1980, one day before he was gunned down by Mark David Chapman outside his New York City apartment building, the Dakota.
I know we worked together before, we even made albums together before, but we feel like this is the first album. I feel like we're... Nothing happened before today.
In an ABC News radio exclusive, an eyewitness takes ABC's Aaron Katursky back to the scene of the crime and recalls how John Lennon's last moments unfolded.
On the evening of December 8th, 1980, John Lennon was in a music studio recording Yoko Ono's Walking on Thin Ice. Author and media consultant Anthony Rudell, then 23, was on a date.
It was a relatively warmish December Monday night.
By 10:30, Rudell and his friend were walking from a concert at Lincoln Center to his apartment on West 72nd Street.
As we got towards the corner, we glanced to our right into the northbound traffic lane of Central Park West, and there was a black limousine sitting in the left-hand lane. The limousine made the turn, so we were parallel to it right here on the corner as it headed west towards the entrance of Dakota. And the person I was with said, I wonder who that is.
It was just before 11 p.m.
We continued to walk, and if you look across actually now at the Dakota, you see how dark it really is. It's not as bright as any of the other street corners, and that's about as dark as it was.
Our life together is so precious.
Lurking in the darkness, unbeknownst to Rudell, was Mark David Chapman. He had been outside the Dakota most of that day, after earlier getting his copy of Double Fantasy autographed. In his statement to police, Chapman said, I waited until Lennon came back. Anthony Rudell and his date were on their way home, too.
And we continued, and she then said to me, can we watch and see who it is? And I said, sure. And we by now were... I would say right before that third tree on the block. So we stopped and turned to look.
The limousine was in front of the Dakota.
And I saw the door open, and we saw Lennon step out. And then we continued a few more feet to the west. And I remember out of the corner of my eye seeing him turn 90 degrees to his right. Somebody must have caught his attention to his right, and he turned to the right.
Mark David Chapman had called out, "Mr. Lennon," and then crouched into a combat stance.
And then, and this echo.
Do you remember how many shots?
I remember hearing two.
This individual, Mr. Chapman, came up behind him and called to him, "Mr. Lennon."
James Sullivan was then chief of detectives for the New York Police Department.
And then in a combat stance, he emptied the Charter Arms 38 caliber gun that he had with him and shot John Lennon.
Chapman had fired five bullets into John Lennon's back and shoulder. The fatal shot pierced his aorta, as Dr. Stephen Lynn at Roosevelt Hospital explained.
John Lennon was brought to the emergency room shortly before 11 p.m. He was dead on arrival.
Anthony Rudell ran into his apartment across from the Dakota.
That was my living room, and the two windows over were my bedroom.
What a view.
So I had the perfect view. I was on the third floor with these French windows that opened up. I had these beautiful ADS speakers. Big, big, big old speakers. And I turned them out over 72nd Street.
Here come old flat top. He come grooving up slowly. He got...
He blasted for the gathering crowd John Lennon's music.
And people were crying, and people were hugging, and people had guitars, and they were singing. Come together, all the sort of Imagine, every time Imagine played, you could hear people crying.
Imagine there's no heaven.
When the realization of what I had been witness to, when that hit me, I guess I realized, you know, that's the end of an era. This was the first time I remember thinking an icon I had grown up with is gone. And that's the end. The finality of that blew me away, as I think it did everybody else on the street.
Aaron Katursky, ABC News, New York.
Chapman has cited the novel The Catcher in the Rye by J.D. Salinger as an inspiration to shoot Lennon. And he had a copy of the book with him the night of the murder. Chapman had identified strongly with the book's protagonist, Holden Caulfield, who despised phonies. And Chapman sought to kill Lennon because he considered him a phony. Lennon's killer is now serving a 20-years-to-life sentence in New York's Attica State Prison.
Coming up on Lennon, The Loss, The Legacy, an ABC News radio special, Lennon's Lasting Legacy, after this. You're listening to Lennon, The Loss, The Legacy, an ABC News radio special. Here's ABC's Larry Jacobs.
Welcome to the final segment of Lennon, The Loss, The Legacy, an ABC News radio special. I'm ABC's Larry Jacobs.
This is karma's gonna get you.
John Lennon was 40 years old when he died and has been immortalized as a gifted artist whose music and political convictions connected with millions of people around the world, and still do. Actor Dominic Monaghan, star of the ABC TV series Lost, was 4 years old when Lennon died. In fact, Lennon was shot on his fourth birthday. Monaghan, a huge Lennon fan, told us that he uses Lennon as a kind of yardstick for his own actions.
You know those bangles that you see that say, "What would Jesus do?" I find myself a lot of times in my life thinking, what would Lennon do? You know, how would he deal with this situation?
Lennon's widow, Yoko Ono, has worked to keep his memory alive by reissuing his albums and by releasing compilations like the new hits collection, Working Class Hero, and unreleased material like the album Acoustic, which came out last year. It featured Lennon's acoustic performances of some of his classic songs.
Imagine there's no heaven. It's easy if you try.
Everybody's talking about baggies and shaggies and draggies and maddies.
The musical Lennon, which featured a diverse group of actors portraying the former Beatle, did not fare very well on Broadway, however. It was received poorly by critics and closed only weeks after opening this past August. Lennon's music will now likely reach a new generation of listeners since this month his solo catalog becomes available for download online via digital music services. For those who knew Lennon, the music was not the only thing taken from them on December 8, 1980. Producer Jack Douglas told us what he misses most about his old friend.
His humor, his smile, his voice. I mean, God, he's just so funny. He was just hilarious. And he'd just pick up every, you know, the whole day would just be a big smile with him.
Keyboardist Billy Preston, who played with the Beatles and is sometimes called the fifth Beatle because he is the only non-Beatle ever to receive credit on Beatles albums, also misses Lennon's sense of humor.
I mean, he was just a very funny guy, man. He'd keep everybody rolling. He'd keep me in stitches. Crazy.
And that wit is amply in evidence in this 1971 clip from the Dick Cavett Show.
I sat in a restaurant in Spain, and the violinist insisted on playing Yesterday right in my ear. And then he asked me to sign the violin, and I didn't know what to say. I said, well, okay, and I signed it, and Yoko signed it, and one day he's going to find out that Paul wrote it.
Author Larry Kane assesses Lennon's legacy.
He made us think. He made us think about ourselves. He made us think about the world. He made us think about poverty. And he made us think about the state of human affairs, what we were as people. And that's his greatest contribution.
Perhaps when evaluating what John Lennon's legacy is, consider his own words spoken during his very last recorded interview provided by Capitol Records.
It's not out of our control. I still believe in love, peace. I still believe in positive thinking. While there's life, there's hope. Because I always consider my work one piece, and I consider that my work won't be finished until I'm dead and buried, and I hope that's a long, long time.
A working class hero is something to be. If you want to be a hero, well, just follow me. If you want to be a hero, well, just follow me.
For Lennon, The Loss, The Legacy, an ABC News radio special. I'm Larry Jacobs, ABC News.
Lennon, The Loss, The Legacy, an ABC News radio special, was written by Lucy Tauss. The producers are David Blaustein and Lucy Tauss. The executive producer is Andrew Kalb. The associate producers are Andrea Dresdale, Bill Deal, and Wayne Fisk. The West Coast coordinator is Dave Alpert. Special thanks to Al Mancini and Blair Cullen.